and knock on our door.
Come knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Three's company too. Come and dance on our floor.
Come and dance on our floor.
Take a step that is.
Thank you for knocking on our door and welcome to the Regal Beagle Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the much-loved television sitcom Three's Company. Here we review and discuss each and every Three's Company episode, covering all 8 seasons in chronological order. My name is Danko Jones, and joining me today is my good friend Kieran Grant. Kieran, nice to have you back on the Regal Beagle Podcast.
I am so glad to be back.
We had a wonderful discussion last week. We introduced Cindy Snow, and this is the follow-up episode. This is Cindy's first episode as just living with Jack and Janet.
Taking over Chrissy's life and her job.
Season 5, Episode 8, Jack to the Rescue. It aired January 6, 1981, directed by Dave Powers, written by George Burdett. Cindy is being taken advantage of by her new boss. Janet and Jack meddle and get her fired. Kieran, what did you think of Jack to the Rescue?
Well, this is a pretty much a paint-by-numbers Three's Company episode. I think it was a little more fun than the previous episode, perhaps because they didn't try to cram quite as much in, and it was a little more tawdry and definitely a different kind of goofy, I think. But you know, I have to say, as shallow as it kind of was presented, I did appreciate the sort of self-actualizing that Cindy was able to do over the course of being mistreated by her boss. So even the fact Janet addressed the fact that the boss was not being fair to Cindy at work and making her get his coffee and shop for his wife and those kinds of things, and kind of getting her fired up about how this was not the way, this was not in her job description, you know. So it seemed that there was a, for 1980 or 80, what it was, 81, I guess, is the first episode of 1981. After this would have just aired right after the new year, I think. And
it's interesting because just a few episodes earlier, at the beginning of this season, we had an episode called "And Justice for Jack," where Jack gets sexually harassed on the job at a diner, and when he tells Janet, she has an opposite reaction to how she reacts to Cindy getting Mr. Hadley coffee. She pretty much laughs at Jack, and everybody in the cast does. Furley, Larry, they all crack jokes, and so I see this episode as a way of maybe the writers making up for such a faux pas earlier in the season. So yeah, I think it was a good step forward for Three's Company, because I see the show as a real groundbreaker in several fields, whether it's, you know, Jack being a chef, cooking for the girls, putting the word gay in the forefront on network television in the 70s and 80s, and having all these kind of adult themes that I never saw and you never saw in other sitcoms. And so this is a good way for Three's Company to make up for that "And Justice for Jack" episode and have Cindy fight for her rights, at least Janet kind of puppeteer that.
Interesting, yeah, because that's kind of timely in a way, because the show, obviously being of its time, was concerned with, you know, I think it was such, I mean, it's obviously a show that has multiple repeated episode by episode instances of goofball male chauvinism, and it's usually the show kind of wants it both ways. Let's face it, it can be a kind of a leering, and it was lumped in with ABC's like Jiggle Television and all that, but it does ridicule its you know, characters' sexism. Any of the real predators and pigs on the show, they get their comeuppance. They get hoisted on their own petard. Normally, Jack is and Larry are seen as figures of kind of worthy of mockery when they misstep, but they're otherwise, especially Jack, are, you know, seen as sympathetic. And it's interesting that there was an episode recently that that missed the boat on the fact that you know, that would shame a guy for you know, and almost emasculate him for having come forward as being victimized or mistreated or harassed or anything like that. But you know, that's the times, right? They're still probably had their heads pretty far up their asses in a lot of ways. I remember those times.
So do I. and this is This is a great episode in that sense. Again, I'm not a big Cindy fan, so I just feel, you know, Chrissy or Terry would have kind of hit it out of the park a little more, just being the secretary to Mr. Hadley. But still, it's a good one. You know, I love Mr. Hadley's been behaving badly.
Oh, that line, that I don't know why that cracked me up, because he kept calling him Mr. Badley by accident.
I love it.
And then when he still landed that joke when he said, Mr. let me tell you, Mr. Hadley was behaving badly. Even having heard the play on words previously, I thought, man, that was just the way he dropped that line.
I kind of feel that they wrote named the character Hadley just for that line.
I think they must have. They must have written it backwards. Like, yeah. You know, it's. I think you're right, though. I think whereas Chrissy or Terry would have been able to carry that. In this case, everybody else was doing the heavy lifting around her character.
Yeah.
And it, for the most part, it worked. I mean, the guy who played Mr. Hadley was a really funny, seedy boss, because the way they cast him, he wasn't like Mr. Compton. He wasn't one of those seedy bosses who was like a stereotypical. You know, he was a bit proper. He was kind of patrician and domineering in a different way, and obviously still you know, kind of a pig. And so it was an interesting way to portray somebody like that, this sort of quite a dignified character actor playing him in a very, you know, kind of a subtle and mannered performance that I thought was actually kind of a nice fit.
Rod Colbin is his name. He died in 2007.
And he's another one who looks very familiar.
He also had a recurring role on The Ropers.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, Ropers lasted for one season, and it was going on. No, it had run its course by now, so he was free to jump on the Three's Company ship after the Ropers were canceled. So,
yeah, he was not playing Mr. Hadley on the Ropers, right? It wasn't cross character thing.
No, it wasn't. It was a different character.
Right.
There's four different supporting characters in this episode, and Harriet Hadley, his wife, Ruth Manning, she acted all the way up to her death in 2004. And, I mean, they're all just character actors, very bit parts here and there, and in pretty much any TV show you can name from the 70s. But, I thought it was a kind of a strong episode from a character actor point of view. Those four were great. Even Sheila was great. I thought she was perfect for the role. Didn't say much.
When it's kind of funny, because Jack is, you know, ultimately, you know, to the rescue and trying to do the right thing and everything. But, you know, he gets off on the wrong foot by essentially harassing Sheila, the secretary, when they first meet. Pizza, right? That was Sheila, was the secretary?
Yeah.
When he goes in and the new secretary is there and he makes her dance, he makes her twirl around and dance. I mean, that was pretty painful.
I know. You know, you just have to suspend disbelief, but then they ask you to suspend even more disbelief.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few things, you know, I also just had to chuckle at because of the broadness of it. Like, there's that the scene where Jack catches Mr. Hadley messing around with Sheila, and it's kind of it's almost like an old burlesque. They're in this embrace, and they're kind of nuzzling, and she's got the smile on her face, and it's so broad, and it's like so. It's almost like it's pantomime practically. I thought, it's not even pretending to be lascivious, and it won't go that extra step, which is probably for the best. It tries to keep it as cartoonish as possible.
I don't think he could do it. I don't think Rod Colbin could do it. And I don't think Amy Nachbar, sexy Sheila, would allow it in real life.
I absolutely agree. He seemed too proper and she seemed way too self-possessed. I thought I just looked at them and I could see like they probably, you know, rehearsed the part and were like, let's have fun. Let's keep this clean, you know, and let's try to make this fun. You know, like it's, I will say this though. I actually think it would have, as much as I enjoyed the way Sheila shut down Jack, and I think she was really well deployed in that sense. I think it would have been better had it been a surprise, had Hadley come back to the apartment, made his apologies, been all hangdog, and you know, gracefully gone off, let me make the coffee, and us not know that this was hanging over his head. Because we would have forgiven Hadley for a moment, and we would have thought, wow, isn't this nice? He's come around. And then Jack comes in and gives the Mr. Hadley was behaving badly line and let it be a surprise to us. That I think would have been better writing or better editing.
Interesting. It
had all been off camera. It's been something Jack saw and came back and reported.
This has opened up something, an opportunity for you to write some Three's Company fan fiction.
Oh, nice. Yes. I mean, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more. I mean, I could do entire series on characters that have fallen away. I'd like to know what happened to Michael, the sleazy dance teacher from seasons ago.
You mean Rama Magish?
Same guy, Rama Magish. That's the same guy. That's right.
Yeah.
There's so many people. The guy, Mr. Angelino, and the guy who plays the heavy a lot. I can't remember which characters, but you know, there's a guy who was a repeat performer, and of course, then Linda, and your favorite, and one of mine, Lana Shields. There's so much to be done with these characters, but. I will say this. This is both this episode and the previous one that we spoke about last week. Both of them, great episodes for fur hats. Did you notice that? Did you notice a recurring theme, fur hats? The woman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
That RF brings in last episode, played by Barbara Stewart, that we talked about last week. She's wearing a fur hat in Santa Monica, and then Mrs. Hadley is also, Harriet Hadley, is wearing a fur hat in this one. I think they must have just plunked a fur hat down on the head of any middle-aged woman in order to make her look older and richer and all that kind of stuff. I know these aired in December and January, but I would imagine they were probably shot in the middle of the year and not in fur hat. I don't think it's ever fur hat season in Southern California.
No.
I guess it's a status symbol more like.
Yeah, and a generational cue, you know, I think, I don't know, but maybe the older generation back then, that's what they wore. I don't know.
You know where those hats came from?
Baby seals?
Whatever animal they were, a beaver, seal, I'm guessing that those hats came from our home country. Those hats were shipped down there from here in the gray, white north.
Well, hello?
Yeah, I wanted that to sink in. Just the gravity of that what we call CanCon here in Canada.
Right. Oh, I see what you mean. Right, mm-hmm. There's a little Canadiana in Three's Company.
Just a flicker, because you don't get a lot of it. I think you get the odd character actor in there, the odd bit player, but not a lot of Canadiana in there.
True. Another thing, I before we wrap this episode up, I have to make mention of Furley's resume poems.
Oh, gosh.
Are classic. I love it.
That's classic RF, as is him coming in with the fern, which I felt stupid because I didn't know the genus term or whatever that they were using for the fern, but he did not either.
But what a way to remind everyone that Janet is indeed still working at the flower shop.
Yes, yeah. That was an example of some...
Oops, sorry, man. Okay. Sorry.
That's all right. I'm always happy to hear Ralph, and especially when we're talking about his namesake. But that's some classic Furley, and also I think that the lines about the plants that kind of elevated things a little bit, and it reminded me while I was watching that these are pretty you know, they're smart writers at work and pretty smart actors at work too. And it's funny to watch them try on slightly higher brow comedy once in a while.
Yeah, I do enjoy it. And you know, that's what Don Knotts brings to the show, or what he brought to the show. And I never looked back when the Ropers left the apartment.
Neither did I. I was a big Furley fan. I was a big Don Knotts fan even before, like when I used to watch Andy Griffith. I watched them all at the same time because I would have been too young to be watching Three's Company when this aired, or maybe I would have just been starting to watch it because I would have been about, you know, 8 years old or something. But, you know, I was a huge fan, and he just, you know, he owned this, and he would have so much fun with it and with that character, and really, you know, as you've said in past episodes, you know, just him going toe to toe with John Ritter in the physical comedy department is really great to watch. But I should say also, this episode at the very tail end, when they get the check-in call, you know, Suzanne Summers gets her, like 60 seconds of screen time during the call. There's some great physical comedy from Joyce DeWitt in that scene.
True. Yes. Very noted. Yeah.
Falling off the phone stand like that, like it reminded me, oh, that's right, she's a dancer. Like she really utilized that.
And she's been hanging out with John Ritter for the past 5 years, you know? Yeah. So yeah. And I've always said, like, Joyce DeWitt really held her own being in the middle of, you know, comedic geniuses like Don Knotts and John Ritter and even Norman Fell. She was able to hold her own, and she's great. She's very underrated, and I must say, smoke show in these episodes.
Yeah, she really, she's a totally underrated physical comedian. Yeah. Her movement is terrific, and you know, her large gestures that the show requires. And speaking of, I could do an entire podcast just on the fashions in this show. As I saw, you know, you probably noticed from my little digression about hats there, fur hats. But if you want to talk about Janet looking pretty good, the last week I didn't mention the shirt dresses. She was wearing her classic polo shirt dress, which I think probably must have come in and out of fashion since then about 4 times. Same with the denim dress that Jennifer was wearing in the last episode. I always love spotting things that come in and out of fashion. From 1980, there would have been a style again in 1999, probably, or 2000, and then probably again in like 2010 or something like that. I could be wrong about that last one.
Yeah, it's hard to watch it, and because the fashions have come in and out, I can't really place it anymore. Used to be so dated, but rewatching the episodes, I'm like, yeah, this outfit could have just stepped out of 2018 and 19. So,
mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's like it's kind of, we were looking at it sort of from a postmodern point of view. I know that sounds so kind of elevated and pretentious given we're talking about Three's Company, but,
it's the only way to talk about the show.
Oh, I think so. I think it should be I think there should be university courses on this show.
Oh my God. I would take it.
I had a teacher in high school who taught us, Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest, and he broke it down for us by describing it as an episode of Three's Company.
Oh my God, where's this guy now?
I believe he might still be that, or he was for a long time the headmaster of that school that I went to, which shall remain nameless. But
we got to track him down.
Yeah, and he was a good teacher,
and lay down speech.
Yeah, it was all just about the comedy of, that was a comedy of manners, obviously, which Three's Company is not, but it was about, he was talking about the comedy of misunderstandings, which is, that's the whole damn play, is basically people, you know, imposters and misunderstanding, or false pretenses or whatever. I think this is one more reason why I think in this current episode that we're talking about, that had they left a little more to the imagination with Mr. Hadley, I think it would have been fun.
So, Kieran, what's your final assessment of Jack to the Rescue?
I'm going to give this one a tentative thumbs up because I really enjoyed the work everybody did around a pretty paint by numbers sorry. And I also appreciated the fact, or rather was baffled and appreciated the fact that there were Bella Leicas on the wall in Hadley's office, or they wherever.
I saw that too.
Yeah, it's just like all these strange sort of stringed instruments, you know, rare stringed instruments, imported stringed instruments on the wall, including this Bella Leica that was in prominent in all these shots.
I made me wonder what Mr. Hadley did.
Yes, I was like, are they importers of rare instruments? there was nothing about that office that suggested any work was being done at all. No. which is, you know, that's a TV set for you.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on that. It's okay. But Kieran, come back to the Regal Beagle podcast. We'd love to hear you knock on my door and take a step or two.
If you've got the time, I will return for this rendezvous. I can't quote the lyrics.
I was waiting for you. I was waiting for you to give me a kiss. The kisses would be yours.
I could have finished that line, and I just missed it completely. I swung and I missed.
But yeah, come on back to the Regal Beagle podcast. We'd love to have you come back. And when I say we, I mean me. I'm the only person manning this thing.
I don't believe that for a second. I can't see you right now, Danko, but I have a feeling that Richard Klein is sitting there with you having a good chuckle.
I can't say he is or he isn't, but I will say I have a email from him in my inbox.
Have you read it yet?
Yes, I have. Oh, numerous just times.
Like, you're
numerous
waiting times. Like it's a Christmas present to open it.
No, numerous times. But anyways, thank you. And come and knock on our door again.
I would love to. Thank you very much, Danko.